What a pleasure. Dan Kaler, we're at Yerkes Observatory, the University of Chicago, but it's in Williams Bay, Wisconsin.
That's correct.
My name is Dan Kaler. I'm the Director of Tours and Special Programs at Yerkes.
What an absolute pleasure to come here and see this phenomenal facility.
It's a gorgeous 19th century building. It's done in a Gothic Romanesque style. Lots of terracotta, Roman brick. Very unusual building, very much unlike anything that most people have ever seen before. Not something that they equate with an astronomical observatory.
What I find most fascinating, most intriguing, this is a facility, this is a telescope that was on the drawing boards in the 1890s mm-hmm. and in place but before the turn of the century, of the mm-hmm. 20th century. Mm-hmm. We always remember there's another...
Turn of the century,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. I always have to remind my visitors of that, too, when I talk about the turn of the century. I'm talking about the last one.
Exactly.
Not
yeah.
the most recent one, but the last, you know, the one before.
Here you had this telescope that at the time was state-of-the-art,
mm-hmm.
and here it is 2018, mm-hmm. and you're still using it.
It.
Yeah,
yep.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
It is, and I think that's what visitors find so interesting. And we opened it 3 years ago for public observing tours in the evening, so we have a limited number of positions for those tours. And being in Wisconsin, half my tours get canceled due to weather, so it can be very frustrating for people. But once they get on the tour and they have a good, clear evening, it's fantastic. It is the third largest telescope that's available for public viewing in the world, the other two being at Mount Wilson in California, the 60 and 100 inch telescopes there in Pasadena. The jet stream above us and constant high and low pressure system, so you know weather comes and goes. But about half of our evenings are successful, so we get beautiful clear views of gorgeous celestial objects, do a tour of five or six different classes of objects that astronomers study, and people learn about things that they had no idea existed, and they get to see them in pretty nice detail, I think.
And let's dovetail back the 1890s. These guys were the best and brightest and smartest.
Right.
What they came up with back then, you're still using it today. Talk mm-hmm. to us about your projecting into their minds and how and why they were so advanced that you can use it today.
Well, the situation in the 19th century was basically, it was all new as far as observational astronomy, as far as photographic astronomy. It was a completely new field. And George Ellery Hale, our first observatory director, who is considered the father of modern astrophysics, conceived of a large refracting telescope to study the stars. Also, principally for him, it was to study the sun, to try to unlock the secrets of the sun. That was his main area of interest. That was his goal. He wanted to understand what it was that powered the sun, why it gave off light and heat. And that's what started this whole thing. What they wound up doing was a lot of spectrographic work, a lot of spectrographic study of stars in the evening, and then the sun during the day. So they started building, we'll just call it a database of information, spectral information, about the stars and their chemical composition to understand what was going on. And that's really the root of all of astrophysics is spectroscopy. So that was a new science. It was called the new astronomy at that time. Astrophysics was the new astronomy. Now that's what all astronomers are, is they're astrophysicists. So they were all cutting edge, as we would say, way back in those days. When the telescope opened in 1897, the little curly wisps that we saw in between the stars that were thought to be part of the Milky Way were not understood to be galaxies all onto their own. Edwin Hubble, who was our graduate student here at Yerkes from 1915 to 1917, would go on with George Ellery Hale to Mount Wilson to use the 100-inch telescope to discover the fact that all of those tiny little things that they were seeing, faint little nebulosities, as they referred to them as, turned out to be island universes all onto their own. So that's where they were at the very beginning when this telescope was opened.
So you must feel those who went before you and that sense of history here today.
Oh, absolutely. I feel their influence whenever I open that telescope and start using it for the public. And I'm incredibly proud of the fact that we're using it today to teach people about astronomy. We frequently get comments that it's an obsolete telescope, it's antiquated and that kind of thing. Well, it really isn't, because it's still an extremely useful instrument for teaching astronomy. And there are a lot of old refractors. There are telescopes much older than this one, built in the 18th century, that are doing precisely the same thing. They're smaller, but they're doing the exact same thing at the colleges and universities that they were initially installed in. They're still in operation.
I think a perfect example of that is the Detroit Observatory at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor.
Right.
Isn't that a mind-blowing telescope to think that it was built in Germany and transported and installed, I think, 1865.
That would be about correct, yes. The Morrison Observatory, which is owned by Central Methodist University in Fayette, Missouri, is a prime example of that as well, built around 1875. It's still part of their astronomy and physics program. Their students still use it to study the heavens and to learn astronomy. So these instruments, that's part of the problem with astronomical instruments, is they don't necessarily die when they become obsolete. I mean, humans pass away, and, well, telescopes are inanimate objects, and they don't pass away. They continue to exist. So we still have many of these instruments available to us for use, and it's an excellent way to teach astronomy to adults, to children, to have an opportunity to look through the largest refracting or lens-type telescope in the world, which is what we have here at Yerkes, the 40-inch refractor, is a marvelous opportunity for anybody. And as I mentioned, it's the third largest telescope in the world that's available for public viewing, so who wouldn't want to look through it?
And again, amazing, 100-some years later, it's still very much functional.
Right.
In a lot of ways, it is not obsolete. Correct?
No, it's not. Yeah. And we can attach instruments to it. For example, CCD cameras, charged coupled device cameras. It's a digital camera that is used in astronomy for imaging. You'll find CCD cameras on all the major modern instruments on Mauna Kea, in the Canary Islands, in Chile, where professional astronomy is being done and astronomical research is being done. Those are all digital forms of equipment used to do imaging work.
Is that to enhance the image?
Very good part about digital imaging is there's no film. So if your picture doesn't, you get an immediate feedback on what your picture is. And if it isn't good, you just erase it and you start over again. What used to take hours to build up on photographic film can be done in minutes now. The detail is much greater. No telescope is perfect as far as its tracking of the object to compensate for Earth's rotation. The longer the exposure, the more error-prone those images become. Here we can keep images with digital imaging. We can keep those images fairly short. That is the type of thing that these older telescopes still can do. They can still do imaging. What's really cool when you think about it is you take a 19th century instrument and add 21st century technology to it, you've got a whole new ballgame. You have a whole new world opened up to you that way.
Let's talk about the Hubble for a moment.
Well, Hubble has completely revolutionized astronomy. Those gorgeous, I compete against that sometimes, because those gorgeous images are pretty much what people expect to see through the telescopes when they come here. So what I do normally is I show them some images, Hubble Space Telescope images, either before or after an observing tour, especially if they've looked at an object that I happen to have a good Hubble Space Telescope image of, so they can see the difference between what they can see with their eye with a 40-inch refractor and what the Hubble Space Telescope, which is about 2.5 times the diameter of the Yerkes refractor, can see from space. So they get a real good feel for why we have the differences in technology and what those differences can actually produce.
Dan, I could keep you all day. This is awesome.
Yeah. This is one of those subjects you can talk about for hours or days or weeks, you know, on end. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. So before we go, where are you located and how does somebody find you? When's the best time to come? And
Little commercial message, right? So the Yerkes Observatory is located in Williams Bay, Wisconsin. We are just across the state line from Illinois. We are on the west end of Geneva Lake, which is a beautiful resort area. We're about 2.5 hours or so northwest of downtown Chicago. So a lot of our visitors here are from the Chicago area.
So you probably get some day tripping people then.
Oh, of course, yeah. So a lot of our visitors come from St. Louis, the Twin Cities, from Indianapolis, from Michigan, you know, from the surrounding areas here in the Midwest. But we get visitors throughout the summer from foreign countries, from all over the United States.
Very cool. Dan, for further information.
You can always visit our website, and the address is a little bit complicated because our page is a division of the Astronomy and Astrophysics website for the University of Chicago, which owns the observatory. Easiest way to find us online is to simply do a Google search on Yerkes, Yerkes Observatory. We're the only Yerkes Observatory in the world, so we'll be at the top of your Google search, and you'll find our homepage that way. My name is Dan Kaler. I'm the Director of Tours and Special Programs at Yerkes.
Dan, thanks again. What a pleasure. What a great day.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Wisconsin. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.